So over these last few months, we've been looking at what does it mean to be God's people? Or another way to say that is, what does it mean to be the church? Or as we think about how we want to be the expression of being the church, what does that look like? And we've looked at lots of different places across Scripture, a lot of different ways that those New Testament writers talked about what it meant to be the people of God. And this morning, we're going to take a look at Matthew 5, which is where this salt and light idea comes from. That's something that it's probably a metaphor we use quite a lot, at least in my experience. This is one of those places we keep coming back to. And it's interesting because Matthew 5 and this salt and light piece is something that begins a really lengthy teaching from Jesus. It's one of the few places that Jesus really just is direct and says, here's what you ought to do. We were talking this morning about Gina's going to ask the kids today, if you had a chance to hang out with Jesus, what would you want to do? And we were saying, you know, a lot of us would have questions that we'd want to ask or concerns we'd want to raise. And then we thought, you know, usually when Jesus hung out with people, he just told confusing stories, and that's probably what he would do if we asked those questions too. But Matthew 5 is one of those places where Jesus doesn't do that. Jesus talks a lot about, you know, don't worry, pray like this. You'll know people by the fruit they bring. This is all part of this Matthew 5 through 7, two chapters of really direct stuff. And Jesus starts these statements with this. I'm going to read it both from the NRSV and from the Message. You are the salt of the earth. But if salt has lost its taste, how can its saltiness be restored? It's no longer good for anything, but is thrown out and trampled underfoot. You are the light of the world. A city built on a hill cannot be hid. People don't light a lamp and put it under a bushel. Rather, they put it on a lampstand and it gives light to all the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father in heaven. And here it is from the Message. Let me tell you why you're here. You're here to be salt seasoning that brings out the God flavors of this earth. If you lose your saltiness, how will people taste godliness? You've lost your usefulness and will end up in the garbage. Here's another way to put it. You're here to be light, bringing out the God colors in the world. God is not a secret to be kept. We're going public with this, as public as a city on a hill. If I make you light bearers, you don't think I'm going to hide you under a bucket, do you? I'm putting you on a light stand. Now that I've put you there on a hilltop, on a light stand, shine. Keep open house. Be generous with your lives. By opening up to others, you'll prompt people to open up with God, this generous Father in heaven. As I sat with these verses this week, what really occurred to me was Jesus doesn't make this conditional. Jesus doesn't say you'll be the salt of the earth if, or you can shine the light when. Jesus says that his followers, and by association we, are salt and light. It's not optional. We sometimes talk about Jesus' words about go and make disciples as being the Great Commission. But in some ways, this feels like a bigger commissioning. And maybe commission is not quite the right word, because commission says, go do this thing. And in this case, Jesus is saying, you are this thing. But it also has implication. It's the nature of who we are. We might consider hearing these statements this way. Embrace your saltiness. Be lighthearted. Allow what God calls you to be to define you and the way you encounter the world. Because that's what you're meant to be. Of course, we can live this out in really distorted ways. Jesus says if salt has lost its taste, it's good for nothing and thrown out. Stephen and Letha and I were joking that Jesus never had to drive a car on ice because salt on ice is useful for that. But in Jesus' context, salt that had lost its saltiness didn't do a lot of good. But we're still salt, even if it's not very good salt. We can hide our light, but we're still light. I found this picture this week. If we keep our flame lit under a flammable basket, maybe it's the first century version of a dumpster fire. It just seems inherently unsafe to put a lit candle or lamp underneath a straw basket. One of the interesting things in Christian history is that often what we call orthodoxy has become more important than anything else, that we think rightly about our faith. That's often been an important, really important piece in what's been emphasized. Like, if you think this, you're okay, and if you don't think this, you're not okay. Which referred to the last picture about fire, about how that usually works out. And there is something to be said about thinking rightly. That's important. But it's interesting in that most of these things that Jesus talks about in this rest of this chapter, so in the context of your salt and light, are about what we call orthopraxy, which is right action, right doing. This seems to matter a lot to Jesus because it's what he talks about the most. This teaching in Matthew 5-7 isn't about right thinking in the sense of doctrine. It's about right doing. And we come back around to this. We're not called to be salt and light. We are salt and light, regardless of what our understanding of doctrine is. We may go so far to say, if our doctrine doesn't keep us salty and lit, it's not doing us any good. And it may be clear to us, and I don't mean this in just a judgmental way, but in an observational way, that a lot of the followers of Jesus right now are not particularly flavorful or shedding light in the world. I think it's fair to say that our culture is asking and has been asking, what good is this salt that we're encountering? How does the church shed light on anything? And these seem to me to be fair questions. Too often, the church has been more concerned about power and self-preservation and being right rather than kind, in being self-serving rather than other-serving. If we would compare the action of the church to the ways of living described in Matthew 5-7, it wouldn't be a very favorable comparison. And so maybe one of the filters we need to be running as we think about how we want to be God's people together is, are we practicing what Jesus describes as faithful living? Are we folks who aren't so much interested in towing the line of the law, but instead we're folks who are committed to the inner reality of relationship with God as Jesus describes it? So we're not walking around simply containing our anger, but instead our compassion and care for others change who we are. It transforms the way that we perceive and treat the people around us. That we would do this in love. That we would be careful not to dehumanize others, not only by our outward action, but with our inward holding of them. That we're working to be love not only for people who love us, but those who would other us, who would marginalize us, even people we might begin to consider as enemies. These are the kind of things Jesus talks about. Like, with hyperbole, if your eye causes you to sin, take it out. If your hand causes you to sin, cut it off. This is the emphasis that Jesus puts underneath these ways of being. Hold other people in love. Don't dehumanize other people. These are particularly difficult paradigms to accept and live out in a culture that practices and rewards dehumanizing of the other. We're living in a time that folks are willing to celebrate an ideological win at the expense of others. And it's easy for us to get pulled along by the same tide, to see our righteous causes as more important than love, to be willing to dehumanize those we disagree with,
and those who we believe to be perpetuating evil. Yet when we do this, we're losing our salt flavor. We're hiding our light. And at the center of Jesus' teaching here in Matthew 5 through 7, there's two driving concepts. The first is that we trust God in our prayer, in our needs, in our hope for how things work out, in making things right in the world. Jesus teaches us to pray things like, give us this day our daily bread. Don't worry about what you need. God will provide it. Don't judge others. God will take care of that. Ask for what you need, and don't do it with pretense or show. The second is one we've already talked about, that we're not to dehumanize or mistreat others. Treat others as you would like to be treated. Love your enemies. Say what you actually mean and stick to it. There's a lot of this that feels a lot like what we looked at a couple weeks ago in Romans 12. Similar directives on how to live our lives, how to go about practicing who we're called to be, who we're meant to be. Giving our ordinary lives to God and allowing God to work through them. It's been a number of years ago that I had a friend, and friend is the right word, but it started to kind of feel like this friendship was devolving. And I decided the best way to, you know, rectify that was to write a nasty and vindictive song. And I sat down and I worked hard at it. I worked hard at being clever about how I might be a little cutting and insulting and a little bit, you know, behind the scenes, so that people who also knew this friend would laugh with me about this. But the song, no matter how I worked at it, wouldn't really come together. I kept on getting stuck. And it wasn't because in all honesty, it wasn't because I regretted trying to be mean. At that point, I just wanted to be mean. But the only song that would come out of my guitar ended up not being that song. The song that came out of my guitar, and I would say through me, had lyrics like, "Seems like I need you, because I can't do this alone. The more I struggle, the more it's true, it's impossible on my own." It was this moment of, I think, probably who I really intended to be, as salt and light and kindness in the world, overruled my pettiness in the moment. I love it, kind of, when that happens. That there's a moment where your true desire somehow shines through, even your attempts to be something else. And it helped me to recognize that I loved my friend even though they were driving me nuts, and that I needed to reconcile some things in myself. I bring this up because this call to be salt and light, this affirmation that we're salt and light, doesn't mean we always get it right or do that the best way. But this is something that God does through us. This isn't always something we muster within ourselves, which is not to say we don't have discipline to follow through on what God calls us to be, but that we allow God to call and work through us to make these things happen. I was struck again by Paul's words in Ephesians 2. No, we neither make nor save ourselves. God does both the making and the saving. He creates each of us by Christ Jesus to join him in the work he does, the good work he has gotten ready for us to do, work we'd better be doing. So Jesus is direct in naming that we're salt and light, and then Jesus gives direct and simple, if not easy, instructions on how we practice both being salt and light in the world, and how we sustain our saltiness and our light by trusting God to do this work through us. We are salt and light because God created us to be those things. We continue to be salty salt and shiny light by allowing God to continue to create us as those things. It seems to me what is needed is communities that will truly live this out. And I don't say that to say we haven't been doing that. Of course we've been doing that. There's all kinds of ways that we've tried to do this. We're dedicated to seeing that the work of God be done. We do that in ways that we work for those in need, whether that's ReThreads or the Benevolent Fund. or in trying to help those who don't have housing. We've worked with helping folks by providing citizen classes and making our building available for group functions. For inviting asylum seekers, I was thinking it's been several years ago that Janine worked among us to bring folks who needed house and asylum to have a place to be. Many of us worked through the week in jobs and roles and families and other places and community to be the kind of salt and light that God calls us to be. And I want to be careful to say that out loud this morning, to not say we're not doing this, we are doing this, but to encourage us to keep on doing this. And we're in a new place right now. Paul talked several weeks ago about bodies and trauma. And when he told me about that in our meeting together, the hair on my arms and the back of my neck stood up. There's trauma that we've gone through together, through the pandemic. And that forced us out of rhythm and literally disembodied us. It's something we're still reckoning with. The yearly meeting split, even though it's 7 years ago, deeply affects many of us. And if you're not aware of what that is, I'm glad. You can ask about it, but just know that that's a trauma that we deal with, that still has effect. And so we're in this new place of trying to figure out who we are through this trauma. How do we heal from this trauma? How do we reclaim the salt and light that we're called to be? We find ourselves in a culture that no longer gives honor or deference to the church. And that's both a good and bad thing in my mind. Because maybe it means we have to reclaim that having a place of honor isn't what this is about. And it also means our influence is different. We're standing at a crossroads, and we're at a place in time and history that desperately needs our salt and light. If the church is, if we are going to be effective, then these are the things that Jesus teaches us that we need to be at the core of our practice together. Not as legalism, but as core practices and paradigms of our lives, of core understandings of who we are and are meant to be. So here are some questions that seem to be the heart of this. When we pray, are we willing to pray the prayer that Jesus taught us? Are we willing to practice our spirituality and trust and not as a public show? Are we willing to trust and not worry? Are we willing to engage in honest and deep self-reflection in order that we can see clearly? Are we willing to ask and trust for what we need? And are we willing to earnestly put these ways of being into practice in our lives so that we can have a house built on a solid foundation rather than on sand? So friends, let's take some time to listen together. We believe that Christ is present among us and that Christ will speak to us. There's some queries here, and if those are helpful to you, please use them. If they're not, please ignore them. If Christ has a message through you, please stand and a mic will be brought so we can hear what God has to say through us. Let's listen together.